Bruce Jenelson joins us, professor of public policy, political science at Duke University. Our friend previously worked in the State Department and on a Middle East peace process. He knows the region, knows the players, been involved in all of this. Good morning, Bruce. How are you?
I'm okay, Tommy. Hope you are as well.
I am, sir. If you could take a little bit of time with us this morning, because I think sometimes this all blurs into, yeah, well, people over there are blowing each other up. They've been blowing each other up for a while, but there's a lot more context than that. There's a lot more nuance than that. And if you can maybe, I guess, take us back to October, almost a year ago?
Yeah, pretty much. October 7th will be 1 year coming up on us.
And what happened then was there were a group of, tell us.
Yeah, Hamas terrorists penetrated the border of Israel pretty massively and slaughtered some 1,200 people, took a couple hundred hostage, and the slaughtering was in little villages called kibbutzes. It was all these young people at a music festival that was down in that area of Israel. And the worst terrorist attack on Israel in its history, the most killing of Jews in any single day since the Nazi Holocaust. And then, you know, in the weeks following, Israel mounted a massive war in Gaza, and it's taken a huge toll. Estimates of over 40,000 Palestinians, you know, predominantly civilians killed over there. And as you and I have talked about a lot of times, there's all sorts of other possibilities of escalation. And now, you know, we're looking at what's happening in Lebanon as a real, real risk of the war spreading even more.
So, for again, just to kind of bring people up to speed here, I'm having a hard time here, Bruce. The West Bank. What am I thinking of? The area where they came from?
In Gaza.
I'm having one of those mornings. Gaza. The people that live in Gaza are there. Why? How did they get there?
You know, this goes way back to 1948. When that whole area was colonies, mostly of Britain, and after World War II, the decision was made by the United Nations, one of its first major decisions, to partition the area into a state of Israel and a state of Palestine. And borders were drawn, at least on paper, and two things happened, to be honest. One was the Arab countries surrounding Israel, Egypt, Jordan, Iraq, Syria, Lebanon, didn't want Israel to be created, and they started a war against Israel to prevent its creation. And secondly, Israel, from the area that was going to be Israel, forced out many, many Palestinians who've been living there for generations. And the Palestinians call it the Nakba, the disaster. And that kind of started us where we're 75 years later on, you know, frequent wars, people living under occupation, Israeli occupation, Palestinians being kept in refugee camps. And then since October 7th, you know, it really went to the proverbial next level with all of the violence and the terrorism and the Israeli war and the risks all around on all these other borders.
I'll be honest about this, Bruce. You know what caused my problems? They put a new computer in here, and I was trying to zoom in on a map of Israel, and it kept crashing on me, and that's why I was fumbling and rumbling and stumbling so much. It's sometimes the most minor things, isn't it, that can cause you problems?
Yeah, I got to watch these technologies. When they switch my computer, it takes me a week with all my IT guys to feel comfortable
yes.
again.
I'm trying to zoom in on a damn map, and I'm sounding like I've never even read anything about this at all. What do you know about the hostages? Or how many are remaining, or are they alive or not?
Really hard to tell. Fewer and fewer. You know, there was the murder of six hostages a couple weeks ago, including an American one. And, you know, much of the protest in Israel against the government of Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu has been along the lines of hostages first. You know, there's a lot of, you know, belief in Israel that, you know, let's get to a ceasefire. They don't trust Hamas, but they know how terrible the situation is, and let's bring the hostages home. And there are fewer and fewer. We don't know how many are still alive. There have been a couple rescues, and some of the rescues have, you know, brought some home. But, you know, we're right on the eve of the beginning of the Jewish New Year, the high holy days of Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur, and you can only imagine the grief and the stress for Israelis, and also the Israelis who've been displaced. You know, over 100,000 Israelis who live near Lebanon and live near Gaza have been forced away from their homes into, you know, living in hotels and the like. At the same time, you know, Palestinians are living in rubble. You know, 40,000 or so have been killed. Hospitals have been attacked. Schools have been attacked. You know, suffering, deep suffering on both sides.
I want to talk about these pager and walkie-talkie attacks. We come back if we can, or I guess it's attack. I don't know what else word you'd use for him. Bruce Gentleson, professor of public policy and political science at Duke University. Targeted hits, if you want. Previously worked in the State Department on a Middle East peace process. 720 traffic now, WWL. 725, Tommy Tucker, WWL, back with our friend Bruce Gentleson, professor of public policy, political science at Duke University. Previously worked in a State Department on the Middle East peace process, talking about what's going on in the Middle East with Israel and Hezbollah and Lebanon and exploding pagers. It's easy, Bruce, for some people who want to put a white hat on one guy, a black hat on another woman or whatever gender, and make it good guys and bad guys. In this case, it's really not that simple, is it?
No, you're absolutely right. And what the Israelis did last week or so was somehow broke into the supply chain of pagers that Hezbollah and others were using. Hezbollah is the Shiite militia that's been the most active attacking Israel from southern Lebanon. And, you know, blew them up, but also blew up, you know, innocent civilians, women and children. And, you know, the Israelis think that this would make Hezbollah less likely to continue attacking them because you've shown you can get at them, you've disrupted their communications, you've killed some people. But the other side of it is not in any way saying Hezbollah has a white hat, but this can be counterproductive, that it looks like it's leading to an escalation. This morning, Israel further air attacks on Lebanon, killing more people. And it's not clear that Hezbollah is going to say, okay, I'm afraid of you, I'm going to step back. They're going to escalate. And the risk now of Israel having another war on its northern front, at the same time it's fighting in Gaza on its south and west, and then it's possibly spreading elsewhere, you know, is getting, you know, the risk is getting higher and higher now. And it's not a question of whether, you know, Hezbollah deserves it. It's whether, you know, is this working for you, Israel? Is this really working for you? And I'm not sure it is.
It seems like there's a difference between collateral damage and indiscriminate killing.
Yeah, especially with something like this, where pagers are blowing up in, you know, in shops, in grocery stores, in cafes. And, you know, there are many, you know, many Israelis that I know pretty well who are hard, you know, hawkish military strategists, intelligence veterans, who not only, you know, it's not just that they worry about the humanitarian toll. They're the ones saying to the government, this is counterproductive for us, right? So you've got two things, both the toll it's taking and the criticism Israel gets for killing innocent people. And Hezbollah is also killing innocent people. But those who are, you know, real military strategists saying, even if I were to look the other way at that, this is not working for us. It's not making us more secure.
Because you would have to imagine, and I saw the video in a grocery store of, you know, your kid's standing next to somebody that happens to be a terrorist, and all of a sudden your kid's dead because they happen to be standing to it next to a terrorist that the Israelis decided to take out with an exploding pager. That's not overdramatic, is it?
No, and it's, you know, I mean, if we were to think about this, and not just Israel and Hezbollah, but another situation, you know, somebody threatens somebody or takes a punch at them, thinking that's going to intimidate them. Well, oftentimes it leads the person to fight back and escalate, even if you're stronger than them. And right now, Israel's military has been at war for a year. You know, it's deeply strained. Its economy is strained. Airlines, you know, sometimes stop flying to Israel, not protesting politically, but because they're worried about the safety of their crews and passengers. And again, this is not a who's right, who's wrong. You know, it's just some hard-headed strategy for Israel that this is making you less secure, not more, as well as the, you know, humanitarian and ethical questions about blowing people up in grocery stores.
Yeah, you and I have had this conversation before, but it seems like the conversation is you blow up our kids, we're going to blow up your kids, when what's getting lost in all of this is it's wrong to blow up kids.
That's right. No, that's exactly right. Because Israelis are suffering, too. You know, they've been attacked, and people are being killed in Israel. Kids are being traumatized, even if they're not being killed. So people sometimes people look at just one side, and I think what you and I are talking about is you got to look at both sides here, and then figure out what your views are.
Yep, and again, determine the difference between collateral damage and indiscriminate killing. Thank you. Bruce, appreciate your time. As always, Bruce Jenelson, professor of public policy, political science at Duke University, previously worked in the State Department on the Middle East peace process. And for those of you that would text in and say, yeah, well, the people in Gaza voted for Hamas, some did, some didn't. Either way, it's not what they expected. And I don't think you can justify under any circumstance your child standing in a supermarket being blown apart because they happen to be standing next to a terrorist who had an exploding pager. We'll take a break, come back, talk to Mark Drews, Director of Public Works for Jefferson Parish, about preventing flooding in Jefferson Parish in the future. Right now, it's time for WWL First News.